Zena, I'll always love you.
Closed off from love, I didn't need the pain. Once or twice was enough, and it was all in vain. Time starts to pass before you know it, you're frozen. But something happened for the very first time with you. My heart melted to the ground, found something true. And everyone's looking round, thinking I'm going crazy.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Zena and Ubers, aka XNU. My name is Cass, and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those who have been following the podcast so far. We are now on episode number 4. Woohoo! And we are currently doing the Conqueror series by the late L.J. Moss. As per usual, please see my show notes for the link to her website. I have to apologize for the glitch in the last podcast towards the end. It sounded like I had recorded in a cave or something, with the echo on it, and I didn't realize it until it was too late and I had posted already. But I guess that suits me, because my partner doesn't know I'm doing this podcast yet, so I feel like I'm a closet podcaster. And I guess that that's a new term for the 21st century. Well, you heard it here first on XNU for a closet podcaster. But I'm starting to work things out and figure out where I've made my mistakes on podcasting, and hopefully that won't happen again. I also received permission back from another author to read her story on XNU, and that's exciting because I know I'll have some material to read once I finish off this section of the Conqueror series, rather than just sit here and twiddle my thumbs or whistle to you. I'm also going to try and give a video selection or suggestion for the month. So if anyone has seen any good videos or heard of any good ones, drop me a line or drop me an email, you know. This way I can suggest it on for everybody else. Well, with that, let's get on to the show. This week's episode number 4 starts out on chapter 7. For all disclaimers, please see or listen to episode number 1. When last we left, Zena and her slave concubine, Gabrielle, had arrived in Zena's palace, and Gabrielle had been introduced to Delia, who was Zena's cook and confidant, as well as being abruptly introduced to Dimitri, who was one of the palace guards. And then Zena had gone and taken Gabrielle around the palace and shown her the different rooms, shown her the different courtyard area, her bedchamber, where her private study was, things of this nature, and explained to her laid down the rules, basically, of walking around in the palace, and that she should never be interrupted. And later on that evening, after Gabrielle and Zena had made love, she dismissed Gabrielle to her private rooms, which Gabrielle had seen earlier and was taken quite aback by it because she didn't know what to expect. No one had given her a room before, her own private chambers. Zena was at a loss because it was the first time she was by herself without Gabrielle this whole time. And so she went walking around the palace grounds, not knowing what to do because she couldn't get to sleep. So eventually she found herself in Gabrielle's room and watched Gabrielle sleep. And Gabrielle did something that she didn't expect her to do, but Gabrielle comforted her and almost invited her to sleep with her. And Zena said, you know, that's what she wanted to do in her heart, so she succumbed to that wish and stayed there with Gabrielle, and pretty much put it to herself that from now on Gabrielle was going to stay in her bed. So that's where we left off, and now we will start on chapter 7. Chapter 7. To see a world in a grain of sand. Good morning, Gabrielle. I addressed my young slave as she entered my bedchamber. Good morning, my lord, she replied in that soft voice of hers. I just finished dressing, pulling my boots on, when Gabrielle entered the room. She and I sat down to the wooden table where I took my meals. Scylla already set the table with a variety of fruits and baked breads, along with some thinly sliced smoked fish. As usual, Gabrielle sat at the table across from me with her head bowed and her hands in her lap. Taking our meals together was always an adventure. It was obvious my young slave was denied food, somewhere along the way, as a form of punishment. She seemed very accustomed to not eating for long periods of time, then consuming all she could get her hands on to carry her through. I occasionally watched her out of the corner of my eye, and I always seemed to catch her placing something in that pocket of her skirt for later. I sighed to myself on this morning as I watched her slip an apple into that pocket. I could only bite my tongue and continually reiterate the fact that her food hoarding was unnecessary. When I rose from the table, I crossed the room to where my sword lay, atop a chest at the foot of my bed. I strapped it to my hip and felt an oddness to the gesture. Funny, but for all these years that I have ruled and lived in this palace, I have worn one sword, but it still feels strange not to have two swords at my waist, as I do when in battle. I spent so many seasons as a warrior, two blades in my hand, that it truly became part of me. I shook off the memory and returned to the table. Gabrielle watched as I stopped and dropped to one knee before her. My height was intimidating, and I had no desire to press my superiority over my slave. I took her hand in my own and enjoyed the smoothness against my own skin. "Gabrielle?" I paused and she looked up, never completely looking at me in the eye. I wasn't sure where to start since I didn't want to frighten her. "Gabrielle, remember what I told you about food in my home?"
"Yes, my lord."
"Forgive me, I..."
"Shh, it's all right. I'm not angry."
I reached in her pocket and produced the apple she tucked there. She guiltily lowered her eyes. "I want you to try to remember something. Look at me, Gabrielle," I gently added. She raised her head, and again I realized I was growing accustomed to the way her eyes avoided looking directly into mine. "As long as I have food on my table, little one, you will not go hungry." The term of endearment just seemed to spill easily off my tongue. I made no attempt to get it back, as it seemed fitting for my small, lovely slave. "Gabrielle, have I lied to you yet, since you have been in my service?"
"No, my lord."
"And I will not, especially about this. Now," I returned the apple back to its hiding spot in her skirt. "If you want this because you may grow hungry for a snack, or even if you want to pay the stable a visit and treat Tenorio, that is fine. Only, never fear that I will deny you food as punishment. Do you believe me?" I asked at last, knowing it would be difficult for her to answer that.
She didn't know how to answer truthfully. "I will try, my lord."
"Then that is all we can ask, is it not?" I smiled at her, and although it was not something I usually did, it seemed to ease her discomfort a small bit. I found that smiling in Gabrielle's presence was becoming easier, and I wondered if it would ever feel so natural that I wouldn't be aware I was doing it. "I have business on the docks today, and I wish to walk, Gabrielle. Do you wish to join me? It will give you an opportunity to visit the city," I asked, rising from the floor.
"Yes, very much, my lord."
We walked from the palace, my slave and I should have held no fear that Gabrielle would find anyone here to trade affections with. The gossip spread like wildfire, and everyone in the palace already knew not only who this small blonde was, but also what she meant to me. No one even raised an eye to the girl, at least while I was beside her, and certainly no one spoke to her. Hades, the people of Corinth barely acknowledged me, with the exception of lowering their heads and bowing respectful submission. It made me feel rather sorry for Gabrielle, though, to think this was what her life had long consisted of. As I overheard her tell Delia, a body slave lived a lonely life in her master's household. She was cursed for the master's bad temper, and even in good times, no one took a chance at being caught speaking with her. Even in friendship, a casual glance would ignite the jealousy of an angry and possessive master, such as myself. I do not say used to be, for when it comes to Gabrielle, I fear I could fall back into those same fits of fierce suspicion and controlling behavior that consumed me in my younger days. I felt compelled to reassure Gabrielle in some small way, to assure her that I would not be lopping her head off if I saw her speaking to someone on the street. Did I really mean that, however? I had not miraculously grown the heart of a mystic because of my developing feelings towards my small slave. I was still at a loss as to what to say to the woman, but there was a need in me. That was accurately as I could describe it. It was a need to express certain emotions I was having concerning Gabrielle. I grew quickly frustrated as we walked out of the palace gates. I wanted to say so much to her, but I was completely unaware of how to say it.
I wondered if Delia would laugh at my predicament if I were to go to her for help. I wasn't completely inarticulate, however, so I decided to wade right in. You look very nice today, Gabrielle. Very lovely. I commented and caught the surprise in her eyes. Thank you, my lord. I'm only happy that I please you, she answered predictably. It certainly wasn't a lie, nor an exaggeration. Gabrielle, with golden hair falling across her slight shoulders, and the early morning sun filtering through the strands of hair blowing around her face. She looked absolutely beautiful. I didn't even realize I stopped moving until Gabrielle's eyes lifted and briefly caught mine. Very lovely indeed. I gently tapped two fingers under her chin, and was rewarded with something that was a damn close to being a smile. Wait! I tilted my head to see into her eyes, grinning myself. Is that a smile I see? From my Gabrielle? Which made her sort of smile grow. I couldn't help chuckling as I turned and we continued on. The palace guard followed in our wake, and gods only knows what they thought of our exchange. I remembered a time when the guard walked out ahead of me, terrorizing anyone foolish enough to stray into my oncoming path. Now I felt, rather than saw, their understated presence. Gabrielle seemed quite unaccustomed to the people and the bustle of a city like Corinth. I noticed that she began to follow, rather closely at my heels as we strolled along the city streets, towards the docks. I had business today with the captain of my fleet. According to two of my closest advisors, the man was running slaves as one of his little extracurricular activities. I wanted more than hearsay and gossip, and the truth was, if this man was kidnapping young girls here in Corinth to sell them in the north as slaves, I wanted to personally show him how I felt about that. As we walked by the prisoners on their way to the trial or judgment, many called out to me for mercy. I can barely remember the time when I would stride past them, truly unable to hear their cries for leniency. In the last few seasons, it grew especially hard to ignore their pleas. Now, when I look into their faces, I am able to see something that touches a part of me that has laid dormant for much of my life. We passed by and I looked at them, chained or bound, waiting for my wagons to take them to the large palace dungeons. A small boy, no more than 8 or 9 summers, stood watching me rather impassively as I walked by. He looked also at Gabrielle, and I saw the light of compassion burn brightly in her intelligent emerald gaze. The boy had his hands in front of him, his wrists fastened together with manacles that were ludicrously large on his small hands. Yet he stood there, calmly accepting the fate he could easily have escaped from. I'd known assassins that young, so it didn't completely surprise me, a boy that age, headed for the prison. We passed by, and I easily caught the movement of Gabrielle's hands as she slipped the apple from her pocket and pressed it into the surprised boy's small grasp. At first, I was going to shrug it off and ignore my slave's actions, but what Gabrielle just did was so unlike her. For her to risk punishment, her reason for slipping the boy food, an offense any way you looked at it, must mean a great deal to her. I needed, to learn more about this world in which my slave existed. Because of that, I stopped, and when I halted, Gabrielle did the same. Gabrielle, I asked, not turning to look at her, simply knowing she would be there. Yes, my lord, she replied softly. I think she knew that moment I stopped that she was caught. What was that you just did, Gabrielle? I asked evenly. Please forgive me, my lord. She began, and I turned and placed two fingers over her lips to silence her. Gabrielle, I haven't yet placed blame or even accused you of anything. I only inquired about your actions. She lowered her head. I gave the boy the apple I had in my pocket, she answered dutifully. I see. Why did you do that, Gabrielle? He looked as if he was hungry, my lord. Do you realize, little one, that it is a crime to give prisoners anything, even food? Yes, my lord. She again answered, and I barely heard her response this time. So, knowing that you would be punished, you gave the food to the boy anyway, I asked. When Gabrielle nodded and answered with a soft affirmative reply, I questioned her as to why she would perform such a sacrifice. Her answer made me feel completely oblivious to all that went on around me, in my palace, in my city, in the whole of my country. It was as if there was a grain of sand at my feet, and on it existed another world, such as our own, subsisting, right there at my feet, all this time.
He is only a child, my lord. No child deserves to be hungry, she answered.
Anyone who ever thought Gabrielle a stupid woman evidently never spent any time with her at all. I found her insights into the world to be profound, thought-provoking, and tempted with a compassion I had to admit I didn't fully understand. This last statement was no exception. I turned and walked back to where the prisoners stood huddled together. I towered over the boy, and when I asked him his name, he looked up to me in terror. I was now about to learn my second lesson of the day, when it came to how others perceived me. I felt a hand on my forearm, and turned to see my small slave waiting for permission to speak. I arched an eyebrow at her, and she understood my unspoken communication. She leaned up on her tippy-toes, and I leaned down, closer to her. She softly spoke into my ear.
"My lord, I think maybe you are a great deal like your stallion, Tenorio."
She hurried on when I looked at her in complete confusion.
"To people of a much smaller stature, you can be somewhat imposing, thereby, well, intimidating."
Always amazed at the young woman, she was quickly becoming one of my best and most trusted advisers. I took the hint and turned back to the boy, easing myself down on one knee until my head was even with his.
"Do you have a name, boy?" I asked. "Petra, Lord Conqueror," the boy answered my question.
"Why do you wear the chains of a prisoner, Petra?"
"I was caught stealing food, Lord Conqueror."
"Food does seem to be the topic today." I looked back at Gabrielle in amusement, and she bowed her head. "So, Petra, why does a boy your age need to steal food? Don't your mother and father feed you well enough?"
"It wasn't for me, Lord Conqueror. It was for my mother and two sisters. My father was a soldier in the Lord Conqueror's army, but he was killed in the Battle of Chaeronea. My mother is sick and can't work, and my baby sisters need food to eat. I'm sorry, Lord Conqueror," the boy said, valiantly holding back his tears. "I didn't know what else to do. I tried to join the Lord Conqueror's army to earn money for food, but the soldiers laughed at me."
I tried to show no emotion as the boy told his tale. It seemed so melodramatic I wasn't sure if I was being set up or not. "Where do you live, boy?" When the small boy pointed back to the palace gates, I was taken aback. "You live within the walls of the palace? Who is your mother a hired woman for?" I asked, and then proceeded to look even more confused.
"Why, she worked for you, Lord Conqueror,"
he replied, looking at me as if I told him she could fly. Now I was not only confused, but angry too. With my country enjoying such prosperity, were there really children within the very walls of my own palace going hungry? "Jailer!" I shouted, and the man was at my side in an instant. "Remove this boy's chains," I ordered. Once free, I motioned to the boy with my hand. "Show me where you live, boy," I said, and suddenly we were all following Petra back through the palace gates. I knew the small village-style houses that existed in cramped rows at the south end of the palace gates were small and overcrowded. I was in no way, however, prepared for the intolerable conditions when I entered the boys' homes. It was obvious that someone made the attempt to create a living space within the confines of the small room. What few furnishings were there had been scrubbed clean, but the rats that ran within the walls went from house to house, carrying their filth and disease wherever they went. I felt precariously out of my element, standing in the middle of the small room. My height was a definite hazard as my head nearly grazed the ceiling. Petra led me to a small pallet where a slender woman lay, in obvious pain and fever. I kneeled down to look at the woman, and although she probably only had a touch of the chills, it would be fatal without proper care and nutrition. I fancied myself rather knowledgeable when it comes to healing, but that was a great many seasons ago. I became more adept at treating battle wounds than illness, so I did the only thing I could think to do. When feeling this helpless, I called on Gabrielle.
Gabrielle?
I turned, and it seemed that the helplessness tone of my voice and the look in my eye conveyed all that my young slave needed to know. Spurred into action, Gabrielle gave Petra instructions to fetch a pail of fresh drinking water, not from the well the other houses used, but from the one near the gates. By the time the boy rushed back, Amelie stood in the corner and watched as Gabrielle requested items she would need. She took a quill and parchment from one of my messengers and made a list in a careful and precise handwriting. The messenger looked on in awe at my young slave. I doubt he had ever seen one that could write before. Gabrielle looked up at me.
My lord, we will need dinars for some herbs and fresh food.
I nodded and walked out of the house, noticing the small crowd of attention we were drawing. I'm sure the inhabitants of the neighboring houses thought something miraculous was happening, given that I was there, grabbed one of my guards, and dragged him into the house, pushing him in front of Gabrielle. I must say it was amazing to watch, and had I been less redeemed, I would have taken the girl's head off for her forward behavior and presumptuous manner. Gabrielle was ordering people about like she was me. She looked up at the guard before her.
"Can you read?"
she asked. If any other slave had had that question, she would have been scoffed at, or even beaten to the ground. My palace guards were a snobby bunch given their station in the palace, so they would be just the men to do it, too. On this day, however, we were all too astounded by the small slave's behavior to question her. The tone of authority in Gabrielle's voice as she took charge of the scenario simply confounded them all, myself included. The guard nodded dumbly, then added, "Yes, miss."
"Take this list to the market and the apothecary and return straight away with the supplies," she ordered.
The guard took the list and was about to hurry out the doors to do her bidding when he realized, with horror, who he's taken orders from. He quickly turned to me, and I saw the blood had nearly drained from the young man's face. "Yes, go, go!" I waved them off with my hand, trying to make it appear like I agreed with everything Gabrielle was doing. In truth, I hadn't an inkling. Gabrielle put two large kettles on the fire to heat water, and I now realized it was my turn. I was feeling a little useless, so why not heap a little humiliation on top of it, right?
Gabrielle, what... I lowered my voice so no one outside could hear me. What do you want me to do?
I could only pray to Athena that I didn't sound as pathetic to her as I did to my own ears.
Would you... She paused as she were reconsidering the quest. Would you take the children outside?
She asked timidly, waiting for my roar, I'm sure. I arched one eyebrow, just about as high as it would go. I looked at my feet, and the two young girls stood there, peering as if they were looking up at a mountain. Neither of them came past my knees, and one smiled broadly up at me. She wrapped her arms around my leg and laid her cheek against the trouser-clad limb. I froze.
"Me?"
I said weakly. If I didn't know better, I would have sworn that Gabrielle smiled just before she turned back to the fire. When she turned back my way, she came closer and whispered under her breath,
"I need to bathe her and remove the soiled linen and clothes, my lord. These children shouldn't see that."
She calmly waited for my decision, and I even thought about grabbing one of the palace guards and forcing them to play babysitter. Two things stopped me. One, I have never in my entire life asked a soldier to do something that I myself was unwilling or unable to do. Secondly, there was this tiny girl with her arm still wrapped around my leg. I was amazed that something so small could frighten me so completely. She looked at me in a way I had never been gazed upon before. She had no idea, no preconceived notions of who I was or what I was capable of, no knowledge of what horrible things made up my past. I was looking upon that grain of sand again and seeing a completely new world. I sighed and gave my best smirk to Gabrielle. I bent down and scooped the larger girl up into my arms. I didn't have to reach down for the other one. She wrapped herself around my leg, and when I tried to walk, it was as if my leg was immobilized. I limped towards the door with my charges. "Come on, boy," I called to Petra as I limped through the doorway. I could only hope that one of my officers didn't pass by. If anyone like Atreus saw me in this position, I would have to run them through. I hate to lose good soldiers that way. Chapter 8. Conqueror, Warrior, Babysitter. I knew that I was coming extremely close to senility when the ramblings of a girl, not yet 5 summers old, was entertaining me. I sat on the bench as the 2 girls jumped in and out of my lap, finally wrestling with one another over who would sit on the cherished position. I lifted them both up at once and placed each one on the top of my thighs. They seemed satisfied with the decision, and the older girl began to talk. That's when I began looking around, impatiently, I admit, for Gabrielle. The young girl, maybe 3 summers of age, took that moment to lean herself against my chest. I felt something akin to panic coming on as she snuggled against me, yawned, and promptly fell asleep. Now I was stuck. The older girl went on about the blue of the sky, the small rag doll she held in her grasp, and my long dark hair. As I said, I knew I was losing my mind because at some point I leaned back against the outside wall of the house and listened in rapt fascination to her ramblings.
I can take them, Lord Conqueror, Petra stammered nervously, seeing the way his sister sprawled across me.
I knew what the boy felt. It was fear of me and who I was. His sisters were too young to know, and I received an unconditional adoration for them. This boy, however, knew me, and the very thought made some part of me want to hang my head in shame. I think he was mostly afraid that I would lose my temper with the small girls. No telling, if he lived around the palace, when he saw me lose my temper. How could I tell him that I was more terrified of these small, gentle bundles than they ever could be of me? "Leave them be, Petra," I responded and motioned for him to sit beside me on the bench. "I want you to tell me a few things about living here, boy." I intended to learn what really happened around here, and why there was such an intolerable living conditions within my palace. I knew I would get no better answers than from one who lived here, and also from someone who appeared to be rather honest. True, he stole the food, but I believe the end justified the means. He attempted to work to provide wages for his family, but was scoffed at by my soldiers. I knew that a young boy like Petra would know a great deal about the area he lived in. The young tend to have big ears, yet some pay them little attention. I wanted names, and I had a feeling Petra knew them all. I watched the boy as he spoke, and repeatedly throughout the conversation, his eyes made their way back to the hilt of my sword. The silver lion's head, with its 2 sapphire eyes, cast rays of light around as the sun caught the metal. I'd had the hilt fashioned when I made a pledge to change my ways. That was 5 seasons ago. Okay, I was progressing slowly, but the lion's head on the hilt of my sword was my silent reminder. It was a remembrance of a time when I thought I could be both warrior and purveyor of justice. It started when Cortese attacked my village, when I ran from home with the guilt that I'd been responsible for my beloved brother's death. I became a warrior with one ideal, to defend my country from anyone who sought to steal it. Persians, Romans, the Gauls, they all regretted the attempt. I made them sorry they ever landed on Greek soil. It was then that I earned the title from the people, Lion of Amphipolis. I'm not sure why they chose that title. My fierce pride, the courage I displayed, the relentless drive as a warrior. These were days before I took to the seas, before Caesar, before Chin, before I became a woman filled with a lust for power and revenge. Caesar, I laughed inwardly. He was dead and gone, killed by his own Senate some 10 seasons ago. So I took the icon of the lion to remind me of what I had been and what I aspired to be again. It was some time later when I felt I'd heard enough from the young boy. I had my suspicions already about who was at the root of stealing the money that belonged here within the poor workers' community. When Petra innocently confirmed these thoughts, I felt a bit of the old Xena creep back into my blood.
"Guard!"
I shouted at one of the palace guards who remained within earshot. "Go to the palace and bring me my healer, Kuros, Captain Atreus, and the chief builder. Bring them immediately," I hissed to the guard. I took a couple deep breaths to try and still the beast that I kept locked away nowadays. It worried, and even frightened me, small bit, that the monster could easily rise. After all the effort I put into keeping this demon at bay, I squeezed my eyes closed and felt the heat of my own blood beginning to rise. It wasn't the battle lust, but righteous indignation that spurred the beast on this time. I sat there, my eyes shut,
knowing that stealing money in my house could get a man killed. Stealing my money could get him crucified.
My lord?
Gabrielle's soft voice caused my head to turn and my eyes to snap open. When I focused my attention upon her, I watched as my small slave flinched in fear. I knew exactly what my expression looked like. When the beast thread so close to the surface as I now allowed, I knew because I saw it thousands of times, mirrored in the faces of men just before I took their lives from them. In that instant, that small tick of a heartbeat, before my gaze softened and my irises changed from icy cold to warm blue, Gabrielle was able to see the beast that lurked below the surface. "It's all right," I said as I held out my hand to her. I never meant for Gabrielle to see the monster. It was enough that she knew what I did in those days past. I never wanted her to see it in me now. That seemed very important to me, and I still wasn't certain why. I believe that in some ways, Gabrielle was rather innocent. That sounds foolish, doesn't it? A woman who has spent half her life as a slave, who provides pleasure to her master alone, and innocent. She may have been knowledgeable in the area of her expertise, but there existed an unspecified vulnerability about the girl, and I didn't want to be the one to shatter that. Gabrielle laid her hand in mine, and I enjoyed the feeling of it for a few heartbeats. The commotion coming down the street alerted me that the men I sent for were arriving. "Gabrielle, take the children inside," I said, rising and placing the smallest child in my slave's arms. The older girl woke with a start, and Gabrielle took her hand to lead her away.
"Petra," Gabrielle called.
"No, leave the boy," I said, my attention focused on the men coming towards us.
"My lord?"
I heard the frightened tone in Gabrielle's questioning voice, and I turned and gave her a very quick smile. "It's all right, little one. Go on now," I said, touching the backs of my fingers to her cheek. She disappeared into the small shack, and I stood there for a few moments, watching the door she'd walked through. I needed to do something for this lovely slave of mine, something to show her how much she was beginning to mean to me.
"Lord Conqueror,"
Atreus said, pulling me from my musing.
"Captain, we have a problem here I want resolved." I needed to say it no other way.
Atreus had been with me long enough to know the inflection of my voice that went along with this order.
"Kuros, there is a woman inside." I pointed to the small shack. "She needs medical attention. Gab, my slave, has been attending to her, but she needs to be moved somewhere within the palace where she can receive proper care."
"Of course, Lord Conqueror," the small man said and rushed into the house. Kuros was dedicated to his healing arts, and I knew the woman would thrive under his care.
"Sigoris," I mentioned my chief builder forward, "I want you to walk along this entire row of houses, if you can call them that, and then return. In that time, I want you to have an idea in your head how we're going to rebuild or repair this mess," I ordered.
Yes, Lord Conqueror," the older man stammered, pulling a quill and small parchment from the pouch at his side. He walked along, peering into doorways and marking on his parchment. Atreus looked amused, but I never felt compelled to challenge my battlefield companion regarding those looks. He didn't look at me that way to appear smug. Rather, I felt the looks were meant to applaud the way in which I changed over the seasons. Atreus was a terror as a warrior, and I felt comfort having him at my side in battle. But he had a gentle demeanor that was a complete turnaround. Once he walked from the field of battle, I often wondered how he did it, but it always explained the amused looks he cast my way. "The boy needs a job," I stated simply. "Could we use one more in the message house?"
"Aye, Lord Conqueror. I will personally see to it."
Atreus looked down at the boy with one of those amused grins. The message house was really just a small room within the confines of the palace, where pages and messengers spent their day. Their only task was to deliver messages back and forth between anyone from the cook to myself. We used young boys for the task, because they were speedy and small, running between people's legs, if need be, to get to the destination quickly. It left soldiers and guards free to do what they were trained for, which was not to be errand boys.
"Will you work hard in the services of the Conqueror, boy?"
Atreus asked Petra. right, Captain,
Petra answered, and I could barely contain myself at the expression on Atreus's face. The boy heard the manner in which Atreus addressed me and was emulating the soldier. I asked Petra who his father was, and given the name, I looked over at Atreus. My captain shrugged ever so slightly at the name, and I had to admit to myself that I rarely took the time to learn the names of any of the soldiers that went to battle with or for me. I came up behind the young boy, who seemed hopeful that we would recognize his father's names. Petra's father fell at Chironia, I stated. Atreus's eyes clouded over, and he nodded. That one had been a hard-fought battle, much more so than many I fought over the years. I heard just recently they were putting up a marble statue of a lion on the site, overlooking the burial mound of the Macedonian dead.
Then your father was indeed a brave soldier, Atreus acknowledged to the boy. You stay with me, boy. I'll show you where you're to go.
I then cast an amused glance at my captain, the same type of expression that he graced me for the last few seasons, the look that said, "We must be mellowing. A boy needs a father, to be sure, and I can think of no better mentor for Petra than Atreus. Petra, I'm going to have your mother and sisters moved into the palace. Atreus will show you where they are after he has shown you to your duties. Do you understand?"
"Aye, Lord Conqueror,"
the boy answered, and I bit my cheek to keep from smiling. "Make it so then, Atreus," I commanded. My captain bowed slightly and turned, Petra imitating his actions, following close on the captain's heels. They were some distance away when Petra came racing back to me. "Did you forget something, boy?"
"This, Lord Conqueror,"
Petra replied. He handed me the apple Gabrielle had given him, placing it in my open palm.
"Please, Lord Conqueror, tell your queen thank you."
The boy ran off just as quickly and left me staring at the piece of fruit lying in my hand. My thoughts were really on his words, however. "My queen," he said of Gabrielle. I wondered if it would destroy his illusions if he were to know she was merely my slave. Just my slave. It was not to be long at all until I discovered how completely ludicrous that thought was. Sigoris finally walked back to me, shaking his head. I had the funny feeling this wasn't going to be good news.
"Lord Conqueror, these structures are not only unsafe, but by the gods, I can't believe humans are living in them. The conditions are appalling. There's only one way to handle this, but I fear you will not like my answer,"
the old man told me. "We need to turn them down and start over," I answered, hands on my hips, looking around me. Sigoris stared at me. I could see the surprise in his face from the corner of my eye, and then I heard the disbelief in his voice.
"Yes, Lord Conqueror, that is correct." "Who was responsible for the monies out of the treasury when these buildings were first erected?" I asked, fairly certain of the answer.
"It's been almost 10 seasons ago, Lord Conqueror. I believe, yes, it will be your man, Dimitri."
"Another nail in your coffin, Dimitri. Sigoris, what do you foresee as a problem in rebuilding here?" I asked the builder.
"Well, the people would have to be housed elsewhere, I suppose, for the 5 or 6 moons it would take to accomplish this task. They could live in the tents on the practice fields. There are plenty of young men willing to earn some dinars by working at construction, so I do not believe the task will be insurmountable in any way."
"I'm glad to hear you say this, Sigoris. We need to tear this abomination down and rebuild. I don't want it rebuilt with the same shoddy materials, and I want each home to have 2 rooms. I will reward you with 100 talents of silver upon its completion," I said to the surprised man.
"Thank you, Lord Conqueror,"
the man answered enthusiastically. "One other thing, Sigoris," I called out to the gray-haired man. "Have Captain Atreus house the soldiers in the tents. The barracks can be cleaned and used by the villagers. I don't want women and children living in tents. Besides, my soldiers get paid to rough it," I said with a smirk, and the old man and I shared a small chuckle. I surprised him today. I was beginning to get that wry feeling of satisfaction from being able to do that to people. Just then, both Kouros and Gabrielle walked from the small house, and Kouros quickly explained that, while the woman was not deathly ill, the conditions here would not only prevent her from growing stronger.
I told him I wished her to be moved to the palace, and left my healer in charge of arranging some rooms. I asked him to have Delia assist with anything else. The small man moved off to make the necessary arrangements, and Gabrielle stood silently at my side. I was told to give this to you. I placed the apple within her small hands. Gabrielle, I began hesitantly, I want you to know that I am very pleased with you. The way you acted today tells me there is more to you, my little one, than meets the eye. I like that. I praise the young woman. Gabrielle lowered her head, but not before I saw a hint of that quirky smile again. Suddenly, I remembered what I was going to do when that day began. Only now, I suspected that my fleet commander might not be in his little scheme alone. To find that out, I would have to become the old conqueror. I would need to act as if I was still a woman whose sexual appetites were filled with violence and lustful perversions. I had no desire for Gabrielle to see me that way. I could tell her it was a ruse, and I'm sure she would understand, but something deep inside me, small tiny voice, begged me not to have the girl see that in me. Acting that way, with Gabrielle so near, so available, let's just say I wasn't that redeemed just yet, and that's what frightened me this most. Gabrielle, I'm going to continue on to the docks alone. I don't think it would be safe for you to be with me. I have to deal with someone, and, well, there might be trouble. At the word trouble, Gabrielle's head snapped up, and her brow furrowed in concern.
Will you be safe, my lord?
The small question shocked me into silence. Gabrielle has certainly shown me any number of kindnesses since she's entered my service. They were small things that were rare for a slave to be thoughtful about, but the display of worry and concern seemed spontaneous and absolutely genuine. Worried about me, little one? I teased the young woman.
My lord, it's...
She lowered her head and stammered. This was uncharacteristic of my slave's customary responses. Gabrielle usually had an answer for everything, a patient, thoughtful, and sometimes profound response. Now she blushed, not like the seasoned body slave she was, but rather a virginal schoolgirl. I couldn't stop the laughter that bubbled up. When she looked up again, her expression was one of relief, I assume brought on by my laughter. I leaned closer to her, towering over her slight frame.
Gabrielle, do you honestly believe that I might not be able to take care of myself?
I whispered to her.
No, of course not, my lord, she answered immediately.
I chuckled again, and I thought I was doing a lot of that lately. Where would you like to go, Gabrielle? I mentioned to one of the guards, the one who fetched us the supplies Gabrielle needed earlier. You may go anywhere you desire, but the guard stays with you. Understand?
Yes, my lord. I think I would like to go to the stables and give Tenorio a treat,
she said, holding the apple up to me, that lopsided semi-smile returning. I grinned right back at her, and I'm sure my guard thought I would look like an idiot. Of course, wishing all of his limbs to remain firmly fastened to his body, he said nothing. I quickly plucked the ripe apple from the surprise girl's hands and tossed it in the air a couple of times. Gabrielle then did something that halted my actions, if not my very thought process. She laughed. It wasn't very long or very hard, but it was like music to my ears and the balm laid across my soul. It was the most refreshing thing I ever heard, and we both stopped and looked at one another. Well, I looked at Gabrielle, and she responded with that nervous behavior where she tries, but she can't actually look me square in the eye. We both knew, in some small way, we crossed lines drawn in the sand today. Actually, it felt more like we rubbed them out and drew new ones. Gabrielle bowed her head again, and by the strange look in her eye, I think that perhaps she was wondering why she was feeling this way herself. I gave instructions to the guard who would go with Gabrielle, and he turned and stepped a few paces away. Smart boy, I thought, because it looked as though he was purposely giving us our privacy. I placed the apple back into my slave's hands and leaned closer to her, lowering my voice for only her to hear.
Tenorio will enjoy the treat. He has the same affinities as his master, I said.
Gabrielle answered in what could only be described as a coquettish manner. God, if I didn't know any better, I would say that my young slave was flirting with me. And those would be, my lord? She tilted her head to one side, and I took care to whisper my response into her ear.
Ripe apples and small blondes.
She lowered her head even further, but not before I saw the smile she was trying to hide.
Another smile for me, Gabrielle? I asked as I began to walk away from her. I am indeed a fortunate conqueror.
Chapter 9. They that take the bribe shall perish by the bribe.
Where is the captain of my fleet? I asked the young sailor at the watch.
He is billeted on the Hybris, Lord Conqueror. Shall I send for him?
No, I'll make my way there, I answered.
Before I made my way to the far end of the wharf, where the largest ship in the fleet, the Hybris, was tied, I called one of the palace guards to my side. It was Nikos, and I was glad. Not only was he an intelligent man, but loyal to me as well. With what I was about to do, that fact became imperative. Nikos had only one arm, but he used a short sword in that one remaining hand better than most. It took quite a long period for him to recover, not from losing the arm, but when we returned from war, for him to realize he was going to live. A soldier with only one arm, well, he drank himself into a stupor to forget for a full season before I had him dragged into the palace before me. I hate the waste of talent and life that drink brings to so many lives, and especially so to this man, who fought with cunning and valor on the field of battle. He had been with the palace guard ever since.
Find Atreus or his lieutenant, and tell them to quietly bring 2 squads of men to the docks. Understand?
Aye, Lord Conqueror.
Nikos was off in a flash, and that made me smile. He wasn't a young man anymore, but I'm sure my words told him we might see a little action today. Being the soldier he was, I'm certain he didn't want to miss a thing. I made my way aboard the Hybris and stood on the deck briefly, feeling the breeze and practically tasting the salt in the air. I miss sailing, but I realize, as I grow older, there are many things I have begun saying that about. I have taken for granted so much over the years. It's been easy to forget the things that brought me real pleasure. I took one last deep breath, and as the air escaped my lungs, I allowed myself to become a woman I abhor. I became the arrogant, smug Xena, who was used to beating men at their own game, for the simple fact that I believed that I was better, smarter. I tossed the dark hair away from my face and moved towards the captain's cabin.
"Who in Hades is pounding on my door like that?"
I heard the man's bellowing rage from the other side of the wooden door. I continued on pounding with the handle of my dagger.
"By the gods! Who's trying to get themselves killed, making that kind of racket on my ship?"
He was shouting as he opened the door and froze in place at the sight of me filling the doorway.
"Don't you mean my ship, Callias?" I drawled.
There was certain satisfaction flowing through me as I looked at the surprised expression on the captain's face. I strode into the large quarters and settled myself into a large wooden chair, leaning back and casually draping one leg over the chair's arm. It was obviously the captain's chair, which is why it gave me a great deal of pleasure taking possession of it. It wasn't until I scanned the room that I saw the girl. When I looked up again and saw the untidy state of the captain's trousers were in, I guessed at what I was interrupting. The girl was young, maybe 14 or 15 summers. She had no scars on her, but she did sport a blackened eye, the bruises seeming rather fresh. Her hands were tied behind her back with a thin strip of worn leather, and her naked body kneeled on the wooden flooring.
"Did I interrupt?" I leered.
I listened as he blustered for a moment, but the young woman on her knees, her wrists bound together in a completely submissive pose, held my attention. For a fleeting moment, I pictured Gabrielle serving me that way, and I had to breathe deeply to dispel the sudden desire that overwhelmed me. Gods, I knew it would be hard to play this part, but I had no idea how easy it would be to slip back, to want to combine those feelings of control and power with sex.
"She's worth it, Lord Conqueror. Perhaps..." He paused, as if judging if he could continue or not. "Perhaps you would care to try her out."
She's that good? I let my legs part a little further, and I wondered if I slipped into the role any deeper, if I were able to stop.
She could do things with that tongue that can make a grown man cry, he answered.
He was drawing near to me, where I sat, and I could smell a combination of alcohol and stale sweat that clung to him. I could tell that he wanted a good view, should I decide to let her pleasure me. In seasons past, public displays of sex never bothered me. In fact, it aroused me all the more to have an audience. I glared up at him, and he backed away a few steps without me saying a word. I lowered my foot to the floor. "Come here, girl," I commanded, realizing this performance was coming dangerously close to becoming reality. She crawled as best as she could towards me, and I grabbed her by the back of the neck and pulled her closer until she knelt between my legs. Almost. I was so close to ripping open my trousers and pulling her to me that it frightened me. In an instant, one small heartbeat, I saw Gabrielle's face in this girl. Only, this time I envisioned not my young slave about to be seduced by me, but Gabrielle, beaten and abused, about to be raped by someone like I used to be. Used to be. My hands went cold, and I could feel my lips pulling back into a thin line. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed Callius watching. He would think it odd if I didn't go through with it now. I reached out and grabbed the girl's hair, jerking her head back until I could see her face. I made the rough treatment look worse than it felt for the girl. I leaned down closer to her. "Did you suck him off before I got here?" I demanded to know. The girl's face turned scarlet all the way down to the roots of her hair. She could only nod her head, and anger ran through me in waves as I felt the young girl's humiliation. I pushed her away. "Then the last place I want your tongue is in me," I responded gruffly. "Turn around," I ordered. She turned around with some difficulty until her back was facing me. I pulled my dagger once again from my belt. "Bend over," I drawled. I bit the inside of my lip until I tasted blood in my mouth to still the call of the beast inside me. It was roaming loose, just underneath the surface, and I barely had enough will of my own left to contain it. Callius licked his lips and watched, preparing, I was sure, to see a good show. I caught his leering gaze, and I swore that if he touched himself, I would hurl the dagger into his chest right now. I leaned down until my lips were practically pressed into the woman's ear. "If you want to live through this today and get away from the scum, you had better do exactly as I say, when I say. If you run, I swear I'll kill you myself. Nod your head if you understand," I whispered. The terrified girl nodded her head up and down, and I swiftly brought my dagger down, slicing smoothly through the leather bindings. I pulled her up roughly and tossed her into a chair. She had huddled there, wrapping her arms around herself. I rose and grabbed the blanket, tossing it her way. Turning back towards Callius, I winked. "Much too distracting when she's naked," I grinned. Callius grinned back, a tad nervously. "Yes, I think she'll do nicely, Callius."
"Lord Conqueror,"
he answered in complete confusion. "Do for me. I was in the market for a young girl, and I heard you were the man to see. I want the one that hasn't been a slave before, but I do hate when they have too much fight left in them," I said, looking the girl up and down.
"But I..."
Callius stammered, unable to think of a reason to deny me, which wouldn't get him killed.
"But she's already broken in,"
he whined at last. "Perfect. Although I wanted a virgin, and one a bit younger, I must have heard wrong. I was told by Dimitri that you could provide me with such a thing. You know, not a slave. Perhaps a nobleman's daughter," I hemmed, pretending to be inquiring about something highly illegal, even in my land. "So, I guess I'll just take her," and made a move to rise from my seat.
"Wait,"
he was thinking hard, and this was just the spot I wanted him in. It was only good fortune that this girl was here, just waiting to be part of my plan. Callius was weighing the option of giving up a valuable, broken-in body slave against admitting his illegal slavery antics. He went with the odds and put his money on my libido.
"How young?" he asked.
I smiled as carnal a smile as I could muster up. Young enough to get me arrested, if I didn't own the whole country, I added.
In the plank house, on the dock. I've got just what you desire, Lord Conqueror.
His smile and his overconfident manner sickened me, and I was torn between gutting him right now or throwing up all over his clean floor. I rose quickly, desperately needing some fresh air.
This way, Lord Conqueror.
He moved out of the way to let me walk in front of him, but I motioned him ahead. Callius was the last person I wanted at my unprotected back. I made sure my dagger was within easy grasp, tucked into my belt, and when I turned to close the door, I held a finger up to my lips in the girl's direction, and she nodded her head. Most of the girls displayed the after-effects of being beaten, but some still had enough strength to cry. When one golden-haired girl looked up at me, in a combination of innocence and fear, Gabrielle's face was again before me.
"This lot is all virgins, Lord Conqueror. Untouched by man, or a woman," he quickly added. "Although it takes quite a few extra dinars to the guards to see that they stay that way till I sell 'em."
He went up close to the girl with the long golden hair. She trembled, and silent tears ran down her face. I guessed her to be all of 10 summers. This was Gabrielle once, 10 summers old, and sold on the block to serve in someone's bedchamber. I could feel my morning's meal rising insistently from my belly.
"Now, this one here," he laid a hand on the girl's shoulder. "She's the age you're looking for, and she's all virgin."
"And she's going to stay that way for quite a while yet," I growled. When I pulled my blade from its scabbard, it made a metallic hissing noise, and I saw the 6 guards hesitate. They, too, seemed to be weighing their options of surrender or battle. Too slowly did they choose, as I plunged my sword into the close man's belly, kicking out and crushing another's kneecap. I saw 2 more guards rush into the old wooden building, but my own palace guards had no clue yet that I was in danger, even with the wailing being done by the group of girls. I dispatched another, and then 1 more soldier, but I wanted Callius. He couldn't run. He knew he had to kill me now. 3 more soldiers fell under my blade, as I saw some of my own guards rush into the building and into the fray. Finally, it was Callius and I circling one another. I spit out blood that collected in my mouth from a backhanded blow that he slipped in, and I cursed myself for leaving him an easy headshot like that. We parried back and forth, and the long building was filled with the sound of metal against metal. I tried to slip my blade in, but he saw it coming, and I received a painful gash across my left bicep for my carelessness.
"You're getting old, Lord Conqueror," Callius spat.
I could see that he thought victory was in his grasp. I may have grown slower over a fortnight without visiting the practice fields, but I was far from done with this man. I took a deep breath and loosened what little remaining hold I had on the beast, leaving it free to control me. When I saw myself reflected in his eyes, my normally blue irises were as colorless as the ice that covered the northern mountains. What Callius saw was the inevitability of his own death. 3 more parries, I left an opening as big as the Aegean for him to see. He fell into the trap and lunged at the opening that closed so quickly he never saw the sword that slipped into his belly and drove into him up to the hilt. I grasped his shoulder, gave a half-turn to the blade, and watched as blood gurgled noisily from his lips. I whispered to him then, and with his dying breath, he told me all I wanted to know. I held on to the man, not allowing him to fall until I watched the last of his life's blood drain slowly away. I was conscious only of the dead weight that hung on the end of my blade, a warm, sticky wetness that covered my hands, and the pounding rush of the adrenaline at my temple. But somewhere, I heard the crying of young girls, and it seemed another voice that I recognized.
"Don't touch her!"
I thought I heard someone say, finally realizing it was Atreus, and that he stood there repeating my name.
"Lord Conqueror! Lord Conqueror!"
It was a steady mantra, and with that seemed like a great deal of effort I pulled my gaze from the dead man in my arms, and focused on the tall soldier at my side. I could see it in his face. Even though we had known another for 20 seasons, even Atreus feared the beast. Nevertheless, he was the bravest man I knew, and a soldier after all.
He squared his shoulders, looked at me full in the eye, calling my name until I could see relief slide across his features. In that weary, battle-hardened face, I thought I saw the support and admiration, both emotions directed at me. When at last I turned away from him to see what I held in my grasp, I felt it, like smoke crawling along the fringes of a wood fire. I felt the awful darkness dissipate somewhat, and with a significant amount of effort, I was able to push the monster into a safe place again. Atreus kicked Talius's body off my blade and tossed a dry rag at me. The first thing I did was wipe my blade clean and replace it within its scabbard. My hands were covered in red, and the white silk of my shirt drenched in the stuff. It usually didn't take this long to put the beast back in its place, except for times when I was involved in an all-out war. I could only assume that righteous indignation helped to increase the intensity of this dark episode. Atreus began examining my arm as I slowly became aware of everything happening around me. "You do realize what an incredibly foolish thing that was to do," he admonished. "Guess you had to be here to realize that it seemed like the thing to do at the time," I shot back. We grinned at one another briefly, each realizing the other would never change. Some warrior ways were simply too ingrained over the passage of time to alter. It took a few more candle marks to straighten everything else out, including returning the girls and helping the unfortunate young women on the boat. With Delia's help, the girls were taken into the palace, under her watchful and caring eyes. I told Atreus about Dimitri's part in the mess, but I also ordered him to hold back. I wanted to give my head man just a little more rope to hang himself with. If I could have known, at that time, what the decision almost cost me, I would have decided against it.
"Ow!"
I cried out as Kouros pulled the thin line of twine through my skin. I glared at the small man, yet he paid little attention to me. Funny thing about my healer, he'd always been quite unimpressed with who I was. Even when my temper was a thing I lost on a routine basis, he generally told me exactly what he thought of me. I leaned against the edge of the wooden, heavy table as the man worked over the injury I received from Callius's sword. The front of my leather trousers were caked in dried blood, and I already tossed my white silk shirt to the floor. The shirt was soaked through with Callius's blood, and even now, the skin of my chest was stained a light red. I was naked from the waist up, but Kouros didn't seem to mind, and modesty had never been much of a priority with me.
I said, "Ow!"
I complained again as the healer tugged again on the stitches he was creating along the long gash on my upper arm. I tried to pull away and see what he was doing, but I stopped at his exasperated sigh.
"It would help if the Lord Conqueror managed to keep still for a few moments," Kouros said evenly. "Well, it hurts, I tell you,"
I answered, realizing I was coming close to sounding like a petulant child.
"You're doing something different because it never hurt like this."
"Well, the Lord Conqueror is at a certain age," my healer trailed off.
"Certain age?"
My voice was getting louder, and I think I may have even raised an octave.
"Shit!"
The pain drew my attention back down to the neat row of tiny stitches Kouros was sewing. One thing I had to admit, his handiwork was good. The stitches were more painful with this method, but being so tiny, it would heal with barely a thin line left as a scar. The only reason my naked body still looked half as good as it did was because of the skill in this foreign man's hands.
"Perhaps I could do what I do for the youngsters, Lord Conqueror. Generally, I tell them that if they behave until I am done, they will receive a piece of sweet candy,"
Kouros contemplated without cracking a smile. I glared down at the small man. "Gods knows you must have to bribe them with something, if this is the best you can do." It was then that I saw a trace of a smile across his face. The loud gasp caused both of us to look up, and I saw Gabrielle's face, frozen in fear, as she stared down at the blood-soaked shirt I removed when I came into my chambers. The young woman then looked at my skin, tinged red from the blood, and she rushed toward me.
"My lord!"
she cried out, and I stood there, rooted in place at the emotion my young slave was displaying. Her green eyes filled with tears as she rushed over to me. "The blood is not mine," I stammered, feeling Gabrielle's arms wrap around my waist. I looked helplessly into Kouros's amused face. She pressed her cheek against my chest, and I could feel the slight body trembling all over.
I held her tightly with my one good arm and kissed the top of her head. I'm all right, Gabrielle. I cut my arm, that's all. See? I tried to pull my arm forward to show her, but the twine cur still held in his hand kept the limb prisoner.
Ow! Shit!
I exclaimed. Just one more, Lord Conqueror, the healer pleaded. Although Gabrielle stopped shivering, she didn't say another word, nor did she lose her grasp around from my waist. I felt a warm wetness upon my chest and realized they were Gabrielle's tears. Crying for me, little one? I asked myself. I held her tightly around the shoulders, pressing her against me gently. Shh. It's all right, little one, I murmured, kissing the top of her head. Gabrielle felt so good pressed up against me, and I felt my body begin to respond. Her head was turned, her cheek flattened against my skin, and I could feel her breath as she exhaled. The small puffs of air were falling across my breast, and I could feel the skin there tightening in response to that innocent stimulation. I saw Kuro's grin out of the corner of my eye, and I glared again at the skilled healer. "Are you done yet?" I prodded. He sliced through the twine easily with a very tiny, very sharp miniature dagger. "Keep it dry. I will suggest you see me later, and I will wrap a bandage around it to keep it clean, Lord Conqueror." "Gabrielle can do that, can't you?" I murmured against the golden crown of her hair. I felt her nod, but there was no verbal response.
"As you wish, Lord Conqueror," Kuro said with a slight bow. "My lady."
He motioned his head to Gabrielle, and he was gone before I could even comment on the last statement. How odd that he would show Gabrielle, a slave, the respect of that title. I'm not even sure if the young woman heard it. "Gabrielle, I need to take a bath and clean this filth off of me. Will you help me?" I asked the woman. Before I could say another word, she ran off through the door that opened into my private bathing room. I shook my head and simply followed the girl, stripping off my boots on the way. The staff sent up hot water earlier, and the steam rose and weaved its way throughout the room. Gabrielle poured room-temperature water into the tub to cool it down. She attempted to help me with the laces that tied my trousers, but they were encrusted with dried blood. "Gabrielle, go to my chest and bring me my dagger," I requested. She looked up at me in dismay at the request. No slave was ever allowed to touch a weapon, and surely not the conqueror's own slave. Yet here I was, requesting that she do this very thing. I turned from her and picked up a comb, trying to remove some bits of dried blood from my hair. I knew Gabrielle still stood there. I could hear her steady breathing. I was hoping that through this act, Gabrielle would come to know the amount of trust I placed in her. Eventually she left, and when she returned, the weapon lay across both her open palms. She raised her hands to me as if she were turning over some sort of sacrificial tool. Indeed, it could be construed as such. The act of me asking and her retrieving meant much more than either of us realized. I took hold of the offered knife and began slicing through the leather laces, practically peeling the trousers from my body. "Let's just burn these. They're beyond repair," I said to Gabrielle as I stepped into the tub and let my body slide under the surface of the water. I kept my arms draped along the rim of the large wooden tub, careful not to get my newly repaired arm wet. Gabrielle bent down to retrieve the discarded clothing, but I held out a hand to stop her. "Scylla can get that, Gabrielle. Right now I need you here with me," I said softly. "Need? Did I actually use that word? God, it's true though, isn't it? At this very moment, I wanted nothing more than to hold Gabrielle against me, to feel her, not out of sex or lust, or I don't know what, but to simply feel her and know that there was one soul in this world who seemed to worry for me. Gabrielle? I had to clear my throat to cover the break in my voice. "Would you join me?" I asked, extending my hand in invitation. I wondered if she thought I sounded weak when I spoke like that. I know it made me feel weak, but then again, I never told anyone how I felt before. Never let anyone see so close to who I was. I watched as Gabrielle began to disrobe, and in this circumstance, I suddenly felt as though it would be rude to continue watching her. I lowered my head and pretended to rub soap into a wet sponge,
but not before I took in the look of surprise and the small hint of a smile on Gabrielle's face. I expected her to lean back against me, but without any shame or preamble, Gabrielle kneeled in front of me into the steamy water and gently took the sponge from my grasp. Rubbing more soap into the sponge, she started at my neck and shoulders, setting about the task of bathing the dried blood from my body. She was careful as she scrubbed my injured arm, moving down and taking my larger hands in her own, each one in turn, and working the soapy lather into the lines of my skin and under the nails. When she continued on, below the surface of the water, I could have leaned back and simply accepted the pleasure. But that wasn't what this was about this time. I halted her hand's progress, trapping it under my palm against the flat of my belly. "You'd better let me do that," I said with a smirk. "Otherwise I won't get my back scrubbed." Gabrielle smiled, and I think she enjoyed the small feeling of power she was beginning to understand she had over me. And I, well, I simply enjoyed seeing that smile. "Turn," she requested with a word, and I did as she bid. I handed her the sponge once again and turned around. After Gabrielle scrubbed my back, I felt her powerful yet sensitive hands begin to attend the muscles in my neck and back. My head fell forward, and I was in a state of bliss, soft moans coming from the back of my throat at the pleasurable sensations. "Let me wash your hair," I heard her say softly near my ear. Who was I to put an end to all this extremely satisfying feelings? I let her command me as I let her command the situation earlier that day. Gabrielle washed my hair, rinsed it with a small pitcher, and then she repeated the action, this time scrubbing the bits of dried dirt and blood from the dark strands. I leaned back, tilting my head one more time as she rinsed the soap away. I hummed. "I feel much better." Gabrielle looked rather pleased with herself, but when she turned away, thinking we were leaving the tub, I caught her arm and pulled her back. "Now it's your turn," I stated. Her eyes went a little wide when she realized I was serious. I knew I was breaking every convention ever laid down between master and slave today, but that word kept repeating itself over and over again in my head. Need. I needed to be close to Gabrielle in this way. I couldn't answer as to why, but something compelled me. I treated Gabrielle's body to the same luxury she had bestowed upon mine, and when I at last rinsed the soap away from the long golden hair, she looked as relaxed as I did. It was then that I leaned back in the still water and pulled Gabrielle backward to lean her back upon my chest. A sound of absolute contentment rumbled through my chest. My arm remained wrapped around the young woman's waist, and Gabrielle's hand rested on my forearm. I closed my eyes and smiled, feeling a relaxed pleasure wash over me as Gabrielle began to lightly brush her fingers along the muscles in my arm and wrist. When I peeked open one eye, I could see that Gabrielle's eyes were closed also, her head turned to the side, resting on my chest. Her fingers seemed to be stroking my skin absently, as if she were not aware of it. I didn't want to be the one to give her a reason to stop. "Feels good, doesn't it?" I asked, closing my eyes again.
"Yes, my lord. Very good,"
Gabrielle sighed in reply. My hidden smile grew larger at the sound of a complete wonder in Gabrielle's voice. To be continued.
Oh, that was chapter 7, 8, and 9 of the Conqueror series by the late L.J. Moss. I hope everyone is enjoying the series so far. I hope to sound as if I'm getting the hang of this podcasting, and besides that, I'm enjoying doing the voices. Hopefully the sound will come out okay this time without any glitches. I'm also going to ask everyone to actively participate in choosing the theme song to this podcast. I will be posting the songs that I've been using for the podcast so far, and would like you to go and vote via email for the one you like the most. The one with the most votes will be the theme song. So you actively get to participate in choosing the theme song for the podcast. The site is xena-ubers.blogspot.com. And if you have any suggestions on some stories or movies, email me at xena.uber@gmail.com. So until the next episode, take care and enjoy life and love. Bye-bye. Closed off from love, I didn't need the pain.
once or twice was enough, and it was all in vain. Time starts to pass before you know it, you